The brand has never been bigger or stronger than it is right now. I mean, if you look at the ratings and the amount of promotion, I don't know if you guys felt it like we felt it, but you had to feel in our business, in your business. My personal social media was off the charts. Biggest numbers that I've ever pulled, ever. UFC social media numbers, off the charts. The traffic. I told you guys the other day, the merchandise. We've already sold more merchandise this year than we did in all of 2019. We already crushed that number for 2019. The list goes on and on. Obviously, in a lot of ways, this has affected our business. There's no gate. That's $110 million in that ballpark and some other things. But we're still rolling. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready to experience something you will not find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined, as always, by Craig Allen, the godfather of Fight Night Picks. Craig, we are Fight Island official. Two cards are now in the books. I got the Island shirt. I've shaved with the proverbial Brillo pad. I got, what do I got here? Pour me something tall and strong, Cancun cup behind me. I'm ready to go. I got the sunglasses on. Craig, how you feeling?
You look like the Bruce Buffer to Michael Buffer. Like Jimmy Buffett's been doing the cool thing for like 30, 40 years, and then you just try to roll up and steal his thunder. Is that what you're going for?
Are you saying I'm Bruce Buffett? Is that what you're getting at?
You're like the Jimmer Fredette of the Buffett family. You're like Jimmer Buffett.
I'll take it. I was going for the older guy in that cocktail movie with Tom Cruise, Brian Brown. That's what I was shooting for. See how I did. All right. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk what's next for Petr Yan, fighter authenticity, and Mike Perry's bar and grill experience. But we begin with some fallout from UFC 251. Craig, if you bet the kids' college fund on Max Holloway, don't fret. The fine people in Las Vegas will refund you happily because it was a bad beat. There is bad beat insurance. The reason that they will refund you is the controversial nature of the finish. Alexander Volkanovski taking a controversial win over the Hawaiian former champ. Craig, here we are again with the judging, and I guess you can add reffing as Leon Roberts, full-time ref, part-time masochist, watched Jose Aldo receive a couple of minutes worth of unintelligently defended strikes. It seems like we talk about this a fair amount on this podcast, but what are your thoughts on the decision in the Holloway-Volkanovski fight, on all the strikes Aldo took? What's the state of reffing and judging in the UFC?
I mean, yeah, you got to feel for all the fans that went out there and picked Max Holloway to win. And it's a shame. There were, like you said, I mean, there were a few different bookmakers that were handing out the money back over to gamblers who bet on Holloway because they thought it was a bit of a shaft job. Yeah, I mean, if you look at Fight Night Picks, we both took Volkanovski. But by the same token, we both took Molly McCann. So what do we know, right? Got to throw that one in there. If I'm looking at this from last weekend's point of view and we're, you know, really analyzing how good was the reffing, how good was the judging? Well, we've seen different instances where judging wasn't too bad or reffing wasn't too bad. We saw it this past Wednesday night where you had referee Mova Hedy. When the fight would go to the mat, multiple different instances in the Abdul Razak Al-Hassan fight with Munir Lazez, Mova Hedy wasn't taking it, and all of a sudden he just stand them right up, and it seemed pretty arbitrary. It looked like he just signed up for a kickboxing fight, and he was there for such. I thought Leon Roberts, don't want to go down that train. I thought Leon Roberts did a poor job in that fight. I mean, Jose Aldo's a legend. He's an old 33. Like, I'm a young 25, and he's taken a ton of punishment in the octagon. So did he need to take all those unanswered shots from Petr Yan? No, he didn't. I also thought Mark Goddard didn't do a good job either. You know, two nut shots and then an illegal knee from Roman Bogatov. And he had enough, and he had to lay his foot down, take 2 points from Bogatov. He could have called it a disqualification, just given the fight to Santos. But I don't know. I mean, what do you do here? That's really the question. Do you have an oversight panel? And what do you do with some of these judges that throw out these random cards?
I don't hate an oversight panel. I will say this. If you're a ref, and a judge for that matter, I guess, but if you're a ref, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. We got a 145-pound goat in Jose Aldo. We got a 135-pound goat in Dominic Cruz. One said the fight was stopped too early. The other said this fight was, you know, or everyone's saying the fight was stopped too late. I mean, if you're a ref, you don't know what the hell to do. You don't know if you should be giving these veterans the benefit of the doubt, if everyone should get the same call. Is it like the NBA where the stars get different reffing than the guys that are on the prelims? Listen, I don't know, because a lot of this comes down to let's talk about Volkanovski and Holloway. If we are talking in terms of what is a knockdown in an MMA contest and what should that get you, right? Holloway had one in the first and one in the second. Now, by fight metrics, very strict standards of a knockdown, they didn't see it that way because Volkanovski was up right away. I'm wondering if they use the same kind of criteria for a takedown. So in boxing, if you get a knockdown, typically you win the round 10-8 unless the guy did really well for the rest of the round. But in boxing, you have 10-11 more rounds to make it up. So it's a dangerous road to go down if we're saying a knockdown equals a deduction in point. So then what does five knockdowns equal? Five deductions in point? It's weird. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I know that the fans expect better answers from us because we're two pretty thought out guys. But it's a dangerous thing to do here. Maybe just judging the fight as a whole. I don't know where we go.
And Luke Thomas and Laura Sanko had this conversation on the Luke Thomas show. I believe it was last week. It might have been actually, no, it was earlier on this week after the Holloway-Volkanovski fight. And Laura Sanko kind of said, well, could we see 9-9 rounds going forward where there's not a lot of action in the cage? Let's call it a 9-9. Or it's an absolute slobber knocker for a round. Let's go 10-10. I scored a round last night, a 10-7 for Khamzat Chimaev over John Phillips. He was beating the hell out of him. It was more than a 10-8. Phillips swung wild, got taken down, and absolutely decimated for a round. I thought it was a 10-7. But where do these scores start to come in? Like, if it's a 10-point must system, John, you fight Matt Allen. It's like Jimmer Buffett fighting Slenderman. And you beat the hell out of Slenderman. I mean, can we give you a 10-2? Like, is that a possibility?
I know. See, that's where it gets crazy. And I guess the last thing I would say is before we completely revamp the entire process, let's just try open scoring. Let's just see if knowing the scores affects the contest. Let's just try it.
I mean, the devil went down to Georgia. Let's have MMA in Kansas.
Rest in peace, Charlie Daniels.
Exactly. Thanks for having me as a part of the show at Craig Allen FNP. And listen, I'm really looking forward to this. We've got a great partnership that we've struck with Ringside Beer, some awesome merch over on their site. They've got some really cool tap handles. I got the MMA glove tap handle. I've got the boxing glove tap handle for their lagers. And listen, I couldn't believe that this was the introductory offer that they have to just our viewers with Fight Night Picks. But if you use the promo code FNP at checkout, ringsidebeerstore.com, you get 25% off your order. They've got some awesome merch over there. They want you to get in the ring with Ringside Beer. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff with those guys, so make sure you check them out, ringsidebeerstore.com. And as always, like we like to say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. John, next one. I'm reading this, and I assume it's because I'm Canadian. The subject is Kamaru Usman, who called out GSP after his victory over Jorge Masvidal. In doing so, Usman has drawn comparisons to GSP because he tied his record of 12 straight welterweight victories. But because I'm Canadian, and I suppose you expect me to say that GSP defeated 10 former or future champions in his career, and Usman's only defeated two, and I mean one of them was a lightweight champ and who was on the downturn. But also the GSP's 12 straight welterweight victories were title fights. I mean, I'm an unbiased media member, John, and I won't allow my Canadian citizenship to affect my assessment of these two fighters. So what are your thoughts here? Who's reigning supreme?
I think that the discussion becomes a discussion of whether or not if Kamaru Usman is using this to get GSP out of retirement, good luck. Because GSP comes out of retirement for what GSP wants to come out of retirement for. And I got news for you, Kamaru Usman. He's not coming out to win a belt he's already held. So unless your name's Khabib Nurmagomedov and you hold the or Conor McGregor or whoever and you hold a 155-pound belt, you can forget about seeing GSP unless there's $15 million attached to the fight, which I don't think there would be for Kamaru Usman. So if this is your ploy to get GSP out, unfortunately, it's not going to work. Now, there's two different discussions to have here. Who's a better welterweight champion or welterweight for that matter, and who would win in a fight? I think there are two different discussions. I think it's a really, really close fight, even in GSP's prime. But I think GSP's clearly the better welterweight. He's the better welterweight champion. But, you know, props to Kamaru for trying to, you know, to poke a sleeping bear.
And I mean, if you look at George St. Pierre, his two losses, you know, Matt Hughes, Matt Serra, he ended up fighting them again, beating them. He beat a lot of top contenders. And then even when he cleaned out a lot of the top guys, he continued to fight big names right up until Johnny Hendricks. And I mean, say what you will, whether or not he won that fight or he lost that fight, it was a pretty important one. And it was, again, depending on how you scored it, it was still an entertaining fight that we're talking about today. Takes years off, comes back, beats Bisping at middleweight, and looked like he didn't miss a step. And the other thing about GSP, for Kamaru Usman, since he's come into MMA, he's like the opposite of Jose Aldo. Kamaru Usman has plenty of fights, but it's in one era against, you know, decent competition all the way up. Good guys in the UFC, and he's had some pretty tough fights lately. You look at Jose Aldo, they're the same age, but Jose Aldo's had way more time inside of the cage against absolute killers at 45. So for Usman, he's got to add to that legacy to get into even the Jose Aldo category before we get into the same weight class with GSP. I don't think a fight's ever going to happen. George St. Pierre to me, and I know they're like, you know, we set it up a certain way. There's going to be some inherent bias. I mean, George St. Pierre is the reason why I get into MMA. So, you know, I got to put that one out there. But I really like and respect Usman's game, but that you kind of mentioned it in the start. Kamaru Usman, and here's the hot take sunglasses. If you're team Usman, you're going to say, listen, and I'm stealing from Hot Take Kate, even though I'm the OG with the hot take sunglasses. But if you look at Kamaru Usman at UFC 251, he can say, I headlined that bill and we sold 1.3 million pay-per-view buys. Who else can say that they've done that recently? John Jones isn't a draw like that. Daniel Cormier isn't a draw like that. My argument would be take those sunglasses off and say, hey, you had Jorge Masvidal to prop you up. You had Aldo and Jan, and you also had a rematch between Volkanovski and Holloway. That's why you had so many pay-per-view buys. Maybe GSP wasn't as big of a draw, but he's regarded as the best fighter of all time by a lot of people. Like, that's not a hot take. So for Usman to get there, you got to beat Wonderboy. You got to beat Gilbert Burns. Maybe a rematch with Covington. You got to continue to add to the legacy and start racking up those title defenses. Because Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre held in such high regard because they kept the belt for so long, kept defending.
Yeah, and there's a video coming for Fight Night Picks soon once I figure out exactly how I want to do these videos about Henry Cejudo and the cheat code of MMA, which is two belts and skip it and hopping divisions. Listen, guys have been doing it in boxing forever, but that's what Kamaru's trying to do here. I mean, not in calling out GSP, but like he's trying to find ways to enhance his legacy without doing the heavy lifting that guys like GSP and Aldo and Silva did, like you said. All right, Craig. Mike Perry, again, he will not be called friend of the show or, you know, anything like that, Mike Perry. He's too dangerous right now. You know, it reminds me of the joke that Dave Chappelle said in one of his stand-ups. He said he went to a party when he was kind of, you know, on his hiatus, and he saw O.J. Simpson there. And O.J. Simpson walked up to him and said, hey, can I have a picture? Chappelle said, my career is too shaky to take a picture with you right now, Juice. We're going to have to save it. So, you know, our career is too shaky to be calling Mike Perry a friend. Not that he's ever was one or ever will be one, but he's back in the headlines. He's had a night out of town, a couple of cocktails, and then proceeded to sit an old man down with a right hand. He was screaming at staff and patrons. And if you think the night couldn't be any worse, Craig, he was very generous in his use of the N-word. Now, Craig, no podcast has had more fun at the expense of Mike Perry. But at this point, is it time to get some professionals involved in this man's life, whether it be therapists or law enforcement? The UFC said they aren't pursuing fights for him until he gets help, which was honestly kind of a surprise for the UFC. I'll ask this. Is the UFC doing enough, or should Perry lose his roster spot over all this?
Two major problems for the ultimate defining championship, as Mike Goldberg would call them. You're still marketing Mike Perry, whether you know it. They up here in Canada, so backstory. You guys in the States switched over to ESPN Plus. You guys are having so much fun under the Disney banner, watching your fights, the buffering, the sounds all off, whatever. Up here, we're still on Fight Pass if you want to watch old fights, or we still have Fight Pass prelims. So if you're watching those, you get a little bit of ads every now and again, unless it's an ESPN Plus card where you don't really have as many ads. Or when it goes to the prelims of the main card and it's a televised one, like an ESPN one, we get it on TSN. On TSN, we still have Fight Pass commercials. And you're going to say, Craig, this is a really roundabout way to get to your answer. While I'm getting to it right now, When I'm watching on Fight Pass, I get ads. When I'm watching on TSN, I get ads. They push ads for Fight Pass on major network television, and they show fighters reacting to fights. Who's one of the main fighters that gets all riled up and all sorts of crazy? Mike Perry. And they still marketed him in that commercial last night, and it played over and over and over again. What I can tell you from watching Canadian television is that I'm not buying the latest car. I'm not drinking enough Heineken, and I'm not learning enough about these fights, and I have to pay attention to Fight Pass. And Mike Perry, whether you know it or not, is telling me to do so. So UFC might not be fine with him pursuing fights, or they're not pursuing fights for him, but they're fine with making money off of his legacy and or his name. And to add one step or one more layer to it, in the first fight on the main card, you had Abdulrazak Alhassan, long-awaited, you know, entrance back into the cage, taking on Tunisia's Munir Lazez. Munir Lazez looked amazing in that fight. Great debut. But what does he do right after that one? A, he speaks like a superstar. B, incredibly respectful with John Anik. Or C, calls out Mike Perry. Or D, all of the above. It's D, John. It's D, Jimmer. It's D. So everybody's still got Mike Perry in their minds and in their mouths. And over on Twitter, it blew up. So I shouldn't have said it that way. I apologize to Latori Gonzalez. But that's, yeah, that's kind of the long and the short of it, as long as we're on Mike's long.
You know, it's interesting. If you pay any attention to Mike Perry's social media, or I guess Latori Gonzalez's social media, Mike Perry's blonde now, which is interesting because once upon a time he was interviewed by Jose Youngs, and he saw Jose's hair and said, that hair sure is friendly. So I guess it's one of those situations where you either die a villain or live long enough to see yourself become friendly. Because my thing is, if you have a situation like he had in the bar, and next thing you know, your hair color's changed, my interpretation of that is that you are evading the law, sir, and you are trying not to be recognized in the streets where you live as Mike Perry. That's why you don't just say, I knocked the old guy out in the bar and grill, and I'm just going to dye my hair blonde just for the hell of it. It looks like the guy's about to go on the lam. So, I mean, for me, he's got problems, and I think that the UFC should step in. First of all, the fact that the UFCPI, I don't know if it has therapists that work out of the UFCPI, certainly wouldn't be a bad idea to have them. I mean, you have every other thing there. Get the guys in-house that you think have these issues, then you can sign off on them. Maybe they want to put some distance between these guys because they're independent contractors and say, hey, you go get yourself straightened out. Come back when you're ready, as opposed to guys like Perry or Hardy did a complete UFCPI program of therapy and then still are acting crazy. I don't know, but I think that's – they need to get – if they want to stay in the business of Mike Perry, they need to get in front of this thing.
Yeah, you got to do something before it gets bad. And obviously, we wish nothing but the best for Mike Perry and Latori Gonzalez and the bar patron that got punched moving forward. So, John, Jimmer, I know that you are nothing if not a huge gamer. And when you aren't watching fights, and especially Bellator, the prelims, we know you're watching Twitch or the newest UFC video game. UFC 4, it was just announced over the weekend. And with that, the cover athletes, I mean, you had to be over the moon. And seriously, this week, EA Sports announced that Israel Adesanya and Jorge Masvidal are going to be the cover athletes. So the first question, are you excited about the video game? The second question is, does Jorge Masvidal losing to Kamaru Usman count against, you know, the Madden curse, since it's an EA Sports game? Kind of like Roger Huerta on Sports Illustrated. And my third question, do you think that the cover and the back of the video game look like hot garbage like I think?
I'll answer them completely out of order. Three, I agree with. Yes, I think they could have done much better. Listen, Craig, I'm of an age where I can wear a shirt like this unironically. Like, I can just wear this, and everybody's like, there's a guy who should be wearing it at his age.
Like Homer Simpson and the Moo Moo.
Yes. So, I am not a gamer, which is interesting because I'm of the generation where gaming began. And some of us put the controllers down at a certain age, and some of us didn't. I'm of the demographic that put them down. So I'm not a huge gamer. I will answer your second question now, which is to say, because of my vast history in the origins of gaming, I can say that Jorge Masvidal's loss does count as the Madden curse because it is an EA Sports game. And your first question, I am excited about the game because I'm trying to get my son into video games a little bit, not hugely into them. The problem is UFC 4 is only available on gaming systems that I don't have. I have old gaming systems. So he may never see UFC 4 in this house. Maybe when he's old enough to play it, it'll be about time I buy him a gaming system for it. But, yeah, I think they could have done a lot better with the cover. I believe they should have squared the guys off. They're not so vastly different in weight. It's not Brock Lesnar and Demetrius Johnson, who are not on the roster, but we'll use it for comparison's sake. It's not those two guys where it's like these two guys that would never fight. You know, there exists a world where Israel Adesanya and Jorge Masvidal can fight. So I think they should have faced them off, put on the bottom who's the biggest star in the world, moved on. That's what I think they should have done. What do you think they should have done?
Well, that might be what they should have done. I mean, instead they have both of the guys together. Then they have Masvidal on the top, Adesanya in the bottom, a little blurb about them. It looks like, you know, way back in middle school when people used to cut out magazines and really put together like a dream collage, that's what it looks like. It looks like absolute hot garbage, like I said. And then if the front cover didn't do enough for you, you get to turn it around and see that there's MMA fighting here. Not to be mistaken with the media organization, but there's MMA fighting going on here. Then there's Kumite for some reason. I don't know why they need to dress people up in costumes and have them fight, but apparently that's cool in 2020. Then above that, backyard boxing. Who gives a damn about backyard boxing? Apparently MMA fans do, because if pandering down to the lowest common denominator with Kumite costumes and backyard boxing wasn't enough, you know what they're doing to the MMA fans? They're thinking that you're interested in Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, and that's going to be the big selling feature to get you to pre-order this game. Hey, guys, you know your favorite boxing stars? We brought them in, but Zuffa boxing isn't a thing. So get excited for this video game that's a hodgepodge of all these things that we don't actually do as the UFC. Just drop the hot take sunglasses, because that's how upset I am about the stupid video game. And to make matters worse, I had a buddy who got the beta. And everybody saw the beta come out. I saw, I'm pretty sure Kairos was the first one that tweeted out the picture that I saw where it did that classic, you know, when you're in Photoshop or Word or whatever, and you go to put a text box in and it says that lorem ipsum or whatever, and then it just spits out a bunch of Latin or what I assume to be Latin because I'm not a big linguist and my lexicon's quite small. But I look at that and they have all this, like they didn't even put the time in. And I get it, it's a beta, we're just testing things out. So my buddy tries it out. And the first thing he sends me in a Snapchat is, man, look at how I beat this guy. My clinch throws are awesome. That's funny that he said that, because the big difference to this video game is that the clinch throws are cool. Who the hell's playing a video game for clinch throws? You're going online to beat the hell out of somebody to play Rock'em Sock'em Robots with UFC fighters. That's what you're into it for. If you're a clinch throw spammer on UFC 3, or to make matters worse, you're getting all excited about it for UFC 4, you're a dweeb and a dork.
And there goes the dweeb and dork demographic. It was nice to see you guys.
That was 99%. Goodbye.
We're hoping that the UFC 4 game appeals to you. Yeah, you know, a lot of this stuff is weird. It seems like a very hipster move. They're doing things, you know, they're trying to be all things to all people. And sometimes you just got to say, this is what we think is cool. And you need to think this is cool. You know, it's you just you can't please everyone. And they're trying to.
Like, they've had Mike Tyson before. And then in the last game, they had Isaac Frost and somebody else from Fight Night, because that was going to stir up some nostalgia. I mean, why not have Halle Berry in there cornering Brian Ortega while we're at it? Let's just do some crazy, funky things.
There you go. All right, Craig. Well, it's happy trails until we meet again for the UFC and Paige VanZant. PVZ got bodied by Amanda Ribas in the latest, in the last fight on our contract with the UFC, and she seems headed to Cokerville. The reality is it might be happy trails and we never meet again for Paige in the UFC. So if that is the case, what will her legacy with the promotion be? And feel free to say anything you want about budding star Amanda Ribas as well, because we got to work her into the show because she's, you know, seems to be America's sweetheart or Brazil's sweetheart.
I'm going to make a joke at your expense, but I don't know, old fella. I don't know who Amanda Ribas is, but I think that Amanda Ribas states a pretty good case.
She's going to
fly
you
right up the ladder. She's going to be the next one to get a title shot. Maybe at 25, too, right after Tyla Santos getting the big win over Molly McCann. Ooh, sore spot. Sorry about that. Now, if I look at Paige VanZant and what she accomplished in the UFC, wins and losses didn't matter. She got the big promotional push at the start. She had the jumping switch kick knockout over Beck Rawlings that a lot of people want to point to. It's Cokerville all the way. I mean, he can set up a rematch between those two. He can say it was a fluke. I mean, Bellator promoted the fact that Beck Rawlings is a bare knuckle boxing champion over MMA laurels. So that just goes to show you what they're concerned about. I think Paige VanZant and Bellator's match made in heaven. She has a shot at the desk. She can do a lot of things for them. She can continue her Instagrams, and she'll be reunited with husband Austin Vanderford. So I think it's good. To answer the question, what's her legacy with the promotion? Confused. Because yeah. They pushed her and then they didn't. And it wasn't her performances that were the push. It was weird.
They pushed her fast. And I will say this. In the defense of Paige VanZant, in the defense of the UFC, they had her in there with everybody she would have been in there with to go where she wanted to go. And she came up short a lot of nights. Listen, she went 5 rounds with Rose Namajunas. Okay, she only went 1 with Michelle Waterson, but she went 5 with Rose Namajunas. So it's not like, you know, she went the distance with Tisha Torres in Invictus. So, I mean, it's not like she's unskilled. I think much like Chael Sonnen, you know, every time we talk about Chael Sonnen and his resume, it's almost like when you look down at it, you're like, man, this guy's going to write a hell of a book someday. And then not only did he end up, he's written a book, but I mean, like since he wrote the book, he's fought other guys. And now it makes him one of the best guys in MMA media because he can reference John Jones and he can talk about Fedor and all this other stuff. She's kind of got that going for her too. So if she ever wants to make a turn where she's full on MMA media, she's fought Namajunas and Rawlings and Waterson and Ostovich. And now she's fought Hibas. She's fought Tisha Torres. I'm not saying she's fought all the studs like Chael did, but she's fought enough people who are relevant enough that she can have opinions on a lot of different things. She's fought Felice Herrig. So she can talk about like the social media aspect from herself, Ostovich and Herrig. She can talk about Namajunas as a champion, Waterson as a mom. Like she can just talk about a lot of different things. So I think that may be the way to go for her. But I think that her legacy with the UFC is pushed too fast, but had all the opportunities to be a champion if it was there. So.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. The female Eric Silva. So we continue on. And Bellator's coming back very soon. Scott Coker announced a handful of dates and fights that have started to book up quickly. In true Bellator fashion, their own version of Fight Island, they're going to call Fight Sphere, which is the lamest thing I've ever heard, next to UFC 4. And they're going to keep a bubble at the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut. Now, last weekend, KSW held an event. I don't know if you were aware of it, but it happened. And they competed against UFC 251. And also one championship, they're starting to book fights up. They've got a card coming up July 31st. My question to you, John, and it's a little complicated, but is it too little too late for some of the smaller promotions who waited while the UFC went full bore during the pandemic?
It depends on what you mean by smaller promotions. If by smaller promotions, you mean KSW, one championship and Bellator, they at least, we believe, have the financial backing to kind of hang around. Now, did they lose some ground that they could have gained? Yeah, but they also could have had every fighter on their card get COVID-19, and it would have been a huge PR nightmare. So you got to kind of weigh things out. I think that they were smart in what they did. If while they had all this time, they were mapping things out, I think they may benefit from regional promotions going belly up in this kind of situation, and guys need a place to fight. Now they go to Bellator, but I don't know that they wouldn't have gone to Bellator anyway. I don't know that a small regional promotion would have had the ability to keep them there, even if they were still in existence. So I don't know what they gained in all this time, although I do think they lost some ground with the UFC. Like, what are your thoughts?
Bellator, if you're tuning into Fight Night Picks Early Stoppage, or if you're following us along on Instagram, this and that, maybe you're aware, maybe you're not aware, because we kind of shifted our content lately. We're doing a lot more stuff with the UFC or covering the UFC a lot more. But that wasn't like our base. And if we had more MMA going on, I'd be talking more about one championship, Bellator, KSW. It's what we normally do. Even with our picks, like we cover KSW or we cover Bellator cards. And we go deep into the prelims with Bellator. And I don't think anybody else does that. And that's not, you know, trying to pump my tires. It's just we really enjoy it. So that's what I'm trying to say. I enjoy the kind of the secondary promotions, if you will, the Bellators, the KSWs, like we said. And then you have, to me, it's that, then it's the third tier, the LFAs, the feeder leagues, the smaller promotions in Canada and around the world. But I think those secondary promotions really lost out on an opportunity because if you look at it, Bellator at the time when everything kind of went down, we're going to be with Viacom. We're going to be on CBS. We're running like the old Strikeforce type of model. And I'm pretty sure wasn't the Strikeforce Brawl, wasn't that on CBS?
It was.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe we could repeat that with Bellator. And yeah, Paul Daly fight somebody. I don't know. Anyway, they lost out there. Like, there was grease in the wheels, and they were starting to move, and then they kind of had to stop. So what did Bellator do? Well, it seems like every night when I go onto YouTube, and I'm sure they target it this way, and then there's a reason why I see it, but Bellator is live just about every night or every other night with an old replay of a card, which I think is awesome. Like, maybe you didn't watch Rory McDonald fight Douglas Lima the first time. Maybe you didn't see Chael Sonnen fight Fedor. Here's your opportunity to watch it for free. They're doing some neat stuff. KSW is doing that. They had an event. But overall, the UFC got 1.3 million pay-per-view buys in a pandemic. And like, I'm not the biggest pro Dana White guy all the time. And we can be critical of him. And there's certain things that you like and that you don't like. I mean, I watched the Munir Lazzez fight, for example, against Abdulrazak Al-Hassan. Lazzez takes his headset off after talking to John Anik, and there's Dana White. And neither one of them are wearing a mask, and they're standing this far apart. Pretty sure everybody's supposed to be wearing a mask in that Fight Island facility. Like, there's just little things that you can nitpick and be critical over. But overall, I think putting on these fights, it's good for me because I have something to cover and talk about. It's good for the fighters. They're getting paid, even though it's not what they want. And it's good for the UFC because they're really banking on this now. So I get it, like a Bellator or KSW One Championship. They can't do exactly what the UFC does because they don't have the means. But they've definitely lost ground because all of a sudden the UFC, not that they weren't that thing, but they just kind of rose above even further.
Yeah, and I guess for me the difference would be, and this is no secret, it's not like I'm telling anything that you guys can figure out on your own, but when I put together Early Stoppage, or Craig and I put together Early Stoppage, we just look through all the websites, we go to Fighting and Junkie, and I look on the underground, and I just see what people are talking about. And if they were talking about Bellator, if there were big, huge fights being announced and different things happening, we'd be talking about Bellator. It's not like we have a UFC bias. It's just the UFC has more going on right now. So that's the point that Craig's kind of making, is that our show is very reflective of what's going on in MMA, because if there's something relevant to talk about, we want to talk about it. So if that's my point, when Scott Coker came out like this, that's when we covered it. So there was some ground lost, and you know, certain entities, the UFC being one, Netflix being another, are people that took this pandemic and really capitalized on it and expanded their brand during this time. And listen, we were critical of Dana at the beginning of this, and in fairness to him, he got it together. He got his testing all straightened out, and it's been, I think, you know, guys have you know, fights have fallen out and this, that, and the other, but he's had some good luck. You know, when your main event falls out and it's replaced by a bigger fight, there's some luck involved in that, right? So I think that, you know, he does deserve some credit, and I think that these other promotions were being wisely cautious, but they did lose ground. That's the reality of the world.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Craig. Let's move on to sparring sessions. Let's talk about Ben Askren and the fact that he was talking about Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal. He said that Jorge Masvidal is popular because he is authentic, and that Kamaru Usman is not popular because he is not authentic. First, do you think Askren is right? And second, do you think this is a problem for the UFC, and do you think it's a problem for Kamaru Usman?
This is nothing that Ben Askren wouldn't say himself, but was that 5-second knockout authentic? Yeah, it was pretty authentic. Listen, this is one where it's weird. I mean, if you listen to the start of the show where we talked about George St. Pierre and Kamaru Usman, like legacy-wise, they're tied for the most wins in the welterweight division, this and that. But is Kamaru Usman on that level yet? I don't think so. But if you flip it around, I think Kamaru Usman, what he's doing right now is great. I mean, the performances he's putting on, you might not love the fight that he had against Jorge Masvidal over the weekend. And I get it. That's fine. I like a guy that pushes forward pressure. I like a guy that'll point. I like a guy that wins a fight. I love foot stomps because nobody throws them enough. I don't like nut shots, but it makes things interesting. But in that fight, he comes out and he does the dance. And I know you'll get into it a little bit, but some people thought it was cringy. I'm fine with it. If he's being himself, or even if he's trying to make slight little subtle changes along the way to try and boost his popularity, you don't know unless you try. And I found that out with Fight Night Picks. You don't know unless you try a couple of different things. So for Kamaru Usman, I don't think the popularity is tied into how authentic he is, because that could be the real genuine article of Kamaru Usman. He's a family guy. He trains really hard. He's a good wrestler. He seems like a really good teammate from what I can tell. And he puts on the performances that a guy who trained in wrestling is going to put on. I mean, you see some wrestle boxers. You see some guys like Chuck Liddell that just threw wrestling out the window and caution to the wind. But Kamaru Usman fights the smart way that he should fight, keep his belt, and continue moving forward. For Ben Askren to say something like that, I think it's a little skewed, because if you look at the time that he spent with Bellator and won championship, he was a champ and he was boring. And unless you were on the underground, who was paying attention to Ben Askren at that point? I mean, yeah. Douglas Lima, who lost, Andre Korshkov, the guy that he rode and cowboyed him. Like, he comes into the UFC. And I sound like I'm ragging on him. I like Ben Askren, and I think the trade was actually good for the UFC, believe it or not. And I love Demetrius Johnson. But for Ben Askren to say that, you were never UFC champion. You didn't have to defend your belt at the highest level against the toughest competition. So it's a little bit different. But you could say by the same token, well, Craig, you didn't own a belt. Well, guess what? I had the Fight Night Picks Prediction Trophy for 2020, so suck on that.
I should let the segment in there, because I mean, how do you top that? But no, I guess here's my thing with Kamaru Usman, and I'll make my point a couple different ways. The first one being, you know, there are people who are, you know, big fish in little ponds and little fish in big ponds, and there are people who can do really well, you know, singing like me in front of my kids. I do not as great at karaoke. I do even worse in front of 1,000 people. I do even more, you know, worse in front of 15,000 people. There are let's take this to just friends. Sometimes you meet a guy and it's like, everybody has to explain why he's cool. No, you got to understand him. He's this, this, and this. And then the other guy's a little bit easier to think is cool. And then there's certain people that just everyone thinks they're cool as soon as they meet them, right? And that's Israel Adesanya. Israel Adesanya, it's very easy when you see him to understand why he's cool, right? Kamaru Usman is spending so much time trying to convince you that he's cool that it doesn't come across as legitimate or genuine. Now, more to your point, that may be his genuine self, but he has to understand, is my genuine self marketable? And if it's not, do I care? Would I rather just be myself? So Nate Diaz and Nick Diaz, they're genuine selves. They may be a little bit amping it up, but their genuine selves is marketable. They found a demographic that enjoys the way they are. They can be themselves and millions of people love it. Kamaru Usman hasn't found that yet. So he has one of two choices. He can either be content not being able to market his true self, and all he has to do is find more marketable dance partners. So he goes from Jorge Masvidal to GSP to Khabib to Conor. Like, he's always finding that dance partner that's going to carry the day, and he'll always have the belt. And he's kind of like Ric Flair in that way. We didn't know until we realized and got older that Ric Flair was the best wrestler of all, because he convinced everybody that he was the worst wrestler of all. That's the, you know, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. That's a line from The Usual Suspects. So my point is that maybe that's Kamaru Usman's game. So either you have to figure out a way to market yourself to the masses, or you have to just be who you are and find much more interesting dance partners.
I mean, are you a Pokemon guy? Are you a Yu-Gi-Oh guy? Or are you a Digimon guy? I mean, it's cool to like all three, and you can be a Digimon guy, but if you want all that Skrilla, you go Pokemon. So what does Kamaru Usman do here with his early 2000s trading cards? Do you go full Pokemon? I don't know.
I do love how I explain things for old people, and you can find a way to explain them for young people. Yeah, all right, Craig. Yeah.
I don't think the kids are still playing with the Digimons.
No, I'm disconnected. I'm a dad.
I was pretty 2000 and late.
All right, Craig, let's move on to make the case. We're going to make the case this week for Bantamweight title shots. I will let you make the case, and I will either add or subtract from the case based on what you say, instead of just us both making the same case. Let's start with Dominic Cruz. Make the case for Dominic Cruz to get the next Bantamweight title shot.
So coming off of talking about Digimon, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh cards, I also was on the debate team in high school. So I'm in the latter half of the popularity contest, or I should say former. But in terms of all of this, if you look at Dominic Cruz and his case for getting a title shot at Bantamweight, don't look at his last performance. That just doesn't matter. Forget about that loss to Henry Cejudo. It didn't even happen, because you know what? This guy has the best footwork in all of MMA. He's a joy to watch. He moves like a butterfly. He stings like a bee. He's like a tiny Muhammad Ali that runs around in a figure eight pattern. And everybody loves it. But the real case that you can make is the fact that he's the greatest of all time at 135. Nobody can take that from him. Not TJ Dillashaw, not Henry Cejudo. Go on down through the list. Nobody else compares to Dominic Cruz. So you can just rest on the fact that he had a good run back when. He was forced out of a lot of fights or a lot of opportunities due to injury. Now still his time. Give him another one.
And I think he's an interesting matchup as well. So he is, he brings two, he brings three things to the table. He brings what you said, which was the legacy. He also brings the matchup, you know, because obviously Petr Yan prefers to stay on his feet. He's looking to switch stances. He's looking to do a lot of different things, chasing Dominic Cruz around and finding openings in Dominic Cruz. If he's able to do that, certainly bolsters his resume. And lastly, he's an analyst. So if Petr Yan puts the complete beat down on him, then Dominic Cruz will be the one, the next Petr Yan fight, talking about how great he is. So he'll have a unique insight into Petr Yan that not everybody's able to see. And Dominic Cruz is good at seeing what others can't and then making them see it. So he helps out just in the analysis of Petr Yan moving forward.
And it helps sell Petr Yan as well, because if you look at Conor McGregor right now, I don't consider his win in January to mean anything at all. But the UFC is going to say he beat Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Can you believe that? They're going to bank on the fact that people don't remember Cowboy's run. They're just going to recognize the name. So with Petr Yan, you can go full babyface after he beats Dominic Cruz, if it happens, and say, oh my gosh, he beat the two greatest bantamweights of all time, Uriah Faber and Dominic Cruz. How awesome is that? Well, I mean, there was a 10-year gap between when they were good, but yeah, you can still sell it.
Let's not get into the details. All right, let's move on with the next bantamweight title shot. Make the case for Cody Garbrandt as the next bantamweight title contender.
He shored up the left-hand side, so he doesn't get hit there anymore. He beat Rafael Assuncao, the forever top three gatekeeper, and he absolutely slept him. Who has a better right hook highlight than Roy Jones Jr.? It could be Cody Garbrandt. I mean, Cody Garbrandt ducking down and then popping back up and tossing that hand is my now I'm all blurry. Now I'm back. But what he did in that fight was almost as cool as what my camera did right there. It was awesome to see Cody Garbrandt take that much time off, come into a fight. There was some hype around him. He was wearing a bandana. He grew out his beard. And then all of a sudden, he knocks out a guy that's hard to finish and hard to fight in a Sunsau. So Cody Garbrandt, it's like, hey, he's right back on top of the world again. Forget about the losses that he had. They really don't matter. And all of a sudden, he inserts well into that fight because, yes, Petr Yan, hugely successful amateur boxing career. That's what he's good at. Oh, by the way, so is Cody Garbrandt. So you're pitting two great styles against each other. And Garbrandt can sell a fight. Win or lose, he's going to sell that fight.
He can sell a fight, and here's what you do if you're Cody Garbrandt. You have three losses. Well, technically you have four, but you have three for all intents and purposes. At pro, one is an amateur. But two of those losses was to one guy. So really it's two losses. And he was a cheater. So you can just say, listen, one of two things happened. Either TJ Dillashaw had my number or he was juiced out of his mind. So either way, let's just say he's one loss. Munoz, you know, a lot was going on.
He was a cheater 5 years ago.
Right. Munoz, if I'm Cody Garbrandt, I just give all credit to Pedro Munoz. Say, listen, he's better than me that night. And then you just have two losses that you're contending with. So one of two things happens if you're the UFC and you give Cody Garbrandt this shot now, because you have a small window. Because either Cody Garbrandt is shot, and if that's the case, then we really need to give him the title shot, because he can get exposed by someone who's not in a title fight, or he's not shot. He could beat Petr Yan, and now you have Cody Garbrandt as a champion and not Petr Yan for years to come. So either way, I think that it makes sense to give Garbrandt the push, because you don't know what you have exactly, and the window's small. All right, let's move on to former World Series of Fighting champion Marlon Moraes. What's make his case for the next bantamweight title shot?
He beat Jose Aldo, the guy who had the last title shot. And you know what Dana White
open and shut case.
Yeah, I mean, Dana White doesn't like to say this, but I was wrong. I made a mistake. Like, he talks, you hear it all the time. You guys should have signed Brandon Lochnane off of his win from Contender Series. no, I'm not wrong about signing people. He goes over to the PFL and just keeps winning. So Dana White's never wrong. But if he wanted to admit that he was wrong, he could easily sell this fight saying, oh, Marlon Moraes outclassed Jose Aldo. The only reason why we put Aldo into that fight was because he was a big name, and it's a good win for Piotr Jan. Marlon Moraes is a rightful contender or challenger at 35, and that's a fight we should go with. And if you want to just go through Marlon Moraes' highlight reel, it's insane. Like, go back to his fight against Jimmy Rivera. Rivera was the hometown guy, and he hit him with a head kick, knocked him out in the first minute. Like, Marlon Moraes is such a fun matchup. I think he beats Piotr Jan. I think he's like that next. It's just that, and you kind of touched on it earlier on in the show, Henry Cejudo just had his number that night, and he was kind of gun shy. There were some moments in that fight where he looked good, so you can throw that into a highlight package. The UFC likes to do that. Like, John, you and I could fight in the backyard on UFC 4, and I could pepper you with a couple of jabs, and you knock me out with an overhand right. And my highlight reel, they're going to show those two jabs landing, and they love to do that in the highlight package. So just show Marlon giving Henry a couple nice leg kicks, and it's, like you said, open and shut case. Marlon Moraes, next bantamweight challenger.
One of the things I remember saying when Marlon Moraes fought Jose Aldo is like, wow, how cool would it have been if these guys fought in Aldo's prime? And I think that when we had those moments in the Petr Yan fight where Jose looked good, we said, how great would it have been if he fought Petr Yan in his prime? Well, Marlon Moraes is kind of like Jose Aldo in his prime. He's good with his knees. He's got good hands. He's good with his leg kicks. He brings a lot to the table. He's fast. He's faster than Jose Aldo is at this point. So a lot of the things that you wish you could have had present against Petr Yan, you would have present if you had Marlon Moraes in there, like you said, he might take the fight. So I think that he is about as skilled as an opponent as there is at 135 pounds for Petr Yan, with the exception of our next person we're going to make the case for a bantamweight title shot, Aljamain Sterling, Funk Master Flex. Let's have it.
The news came out today from speaking with reporters backstage at Yas Island. So this is Saturday's news rehashed to Thursday. That Piotr Jan said, I think October will be a perfect time to make his first title defense. I think Aljamain Sterling deserves to fight for the title. He's on a good streak and beat a lot of good guys. Aljamain Sterling's the most obvious example. And I said Marlon Moraes has a good shot at beating Piotr Jan. I think Aljamain Sterling has a good shot at beating Piotr Jan and then beating every other bantamweight. Aljamain Sterling's the best fighter at bantamweight right now. He does everything well. He throws great kicks. His jiu-jitsu is almost second to none. Look at the fight against Corey Sandhagen. You have to worry about Sandhagen on the ground, and Aljamain Sterling finished him easy in the first round. Like, didn't even have to break a sweat. Both guys are fresh. Both guys want the fight. Strike while the iron's hot. Get Funkmaster out there. Give him the fight. He's been calling for it. He put out a highlight package. Ariel Helwani tweeted out Aljamain Sterling's highlight package. Everybody wants that fight. Just make it.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of depth, especially at the top of this division. And I think that this is a case where, and you're never going to have a division where I don't try and talk the UFC into doing, you know, Hearns, Duran, Leonard, and Hagler from back in the day. Get your four guys and have them all fight more than once, right? Don't just let, you know, Dominic Cruz and Cody Garbrandt fight once and then it gets squared away and then that's it, or twice. Like, get these guys all fighting each other, especially if you have that kind of depth. So if Petr Yan fights Aljamain Sterling and loses, it's not the worst thing in the world. Put him in there with another guy and work this thing where you can market them all together. So I think I'm with you. I think Sterling's a super talented guy. He is not on the tip of every casual's tongue as far as knowing who he is. But here's the deal, and I said this to Kate on Recency Bias. I think one of the things that Dana does that's genius, that doesn't get enough credit, is when everybody in the media wants a fight, Dana tells them, not yet. And I think why he does that is to get the fans to demand it. Because when the fans start demanding it, they'll pay for it. When the media demands it, who knows? The media is going to the fight for free anyway. So he's like, no, not Sterling yet. And then, so he's like, we talked about before what Chael said, the push and the mandate, right? Either you give the promotional push or you do the mandate. It's easy to give a promotional push to Jorge Masvidal, right? Because he's already famous. People already want to see him. There's already a mandate there. If you can create a mandate by denying someone an opportunity, all the better. And I think Dana does that sometimes, and we don't really give him enough credit for how savvy of a move that is.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder in that.
There you go.
And the thing that I want too, I like how you bring up the, what was it, Four Kings back then? Is that what mm-hmm. they called it? The thing that I like about that is if you did it in MMA and you have Cody and Dominic Cruz fight again, we can really see if Cody Garbrandt's been chasing cats all this time. I mean, he said it in that one interview that one weird time, and it hit everybody's ears all strange. But I need to know, what's that like?
You know what I like about what Cody Garbrandt did? We'll get on to our last guy here, but I like the new look a little bit, because sometimes when someone's been away for a while, or not themselves for a while, it's cool to see a new look, kind of reinvent yourself. Like when you see Chappelle now, he's got put on weight. He's a little bit older. He's different than the guy that was on Chappelle's show. He's a little bit wiser. When I look at Cody Garbrandt now, Cody Garbrandt could just be punchy and he just grew a beard to play those mind games. But it's interesting to me when guys come back and they sort of reinvent themselves.
He's starting to lose his hair a little bit. So that's the bandana, but also growing it out. And usually guys that have like the big bushy beards don't really have a lot up top. And I'm the opposite. There's not a whole lot here, but I hope I get to keep this. Hopefully.
They're trying.
I know the fans don't like it.
They're trying to draw attention away from with the beard. I got it. All right, lastly, at bantamweight, make the case for Sugar Sean O'Malley to get the title shot.
I mean, the Sugar Show's in full effect. The guy's off of his USADA suspensions that were real but not real, and put on a great performance against Eddie Wineland. You can say, hey, he beat a WEC bantamweight champ. Now it's his time. UFC bantamweight strap. I mean, champs beating champs. It's unfortunate because Sean O'Malley just had a fight book with Marlon Vera, so we'll have to see where that plays into it. I think a win over Vera sets him up well, but they're going to do the same thing that they're doing with Amanda Ribas at 15 or 25. Give her a big name. I don't know if Eddie Wineland's that guy, but give Sean O'Malley a big name like that, then have him fight another contender, then have him fight maybe another big name that's a little bit further up, then a contender, and so on and so forth, and flip-flop between them to continue to increase his star power. And real props to Sean O'Malley for starting his own clothing company. His YouTube channel is incredibly successful. That promo that he cut where he like hit the bong and then kicked it and was hit in the mitts, I mean, that might not be your cup of tea, but the kid knows how to market himself, and he gets it. So for Sean O'Malley, you can easily insert him into a title fight. It might be way too soon, and he might lose, but then you just build him right back up again.
He's such a star that he doesn't even care if you think he's not a star or anybody thinks he's not a star. This kid announced his fight with Chito Vera on a throne. Like, he was sitting there on a throne and talking about the fight and this, that, and the other. And I mean, even when he kind of messes up, he just sort of moves on. He's a star, 100%. He's in Arizona here where I am, so maybe we'll sit down. He'll put me in some of his clothes. We'll see what's going on there. I think the kid's a star. I think he might as well get to it. Certain guys, you know, listen, if we put Cody Garbrandt on the fast track, why not this kid? I do think he needs to get through Chito Vera. And Chael made some interesting comparisons with him and Conor McGregor early on about how they're fighting certain people. Like, you know, we thought, you know, Conor was getting a layup in Max Holloway, and then Max Holloway turns out to be who Max Holloway was. We thought he was getting a layup in Dustin Poirier. We figured out who Dustin Poirier is. Now, maybe they became who they were because they fought Conor. I don't know. But Chito Vera is more than – he's a lot to bite off. He might be biting off more than this kid can chew, but we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, one has to beg the question. I mean, if Holloway became a star and Dustin Poirier became a star – when is Dennis Seaver going to start to bloom?
He's due. He's certainly due. All right, Craig, let's give shouts to MMA Reddit to start the conversation. This week I want to talk about business versus sport. It's a conversation as old as time. I bring this up because we talked earlier about the bantamweight title and who makes the most sense for Petr Yan. Well, those type of decisions are all over the divisions in the UFC. In fact, they sometimes stagnate divisions because the promotion – seems to be handling their higher-profile fighters in a way to avoid any speed bumps on the way to huge matchups. Let's use Jorge Masvidal, for example. Everyone wants to see him fight Colby Covington. And while that fight would do huge numbers, Covington wins. That's two in a row Masvidal's lost. And then what do you do with him from there? Over the summer, a fight between Justin Gaethje and Conor McGregor was discussed but fell through, probably because of money, probably because the fighters had other options. So, Craig, I guess the question is, what are we doing here with sport and with the business aspect? Is it broken? Does it need to be fixed? Where are we standing right now with it?
On a podcast that we used to be on, and I used to be on every single Monday night, I used to talk about the sports entertainment mix. And then I pepper in a little bit of Google Trends, and I made that my staple for about a year and a half. this is a question that goes hand in hand with that, because if you look at it from a sports entertainment mix, you don't have to look any further than when Israel Adesanya fought at Anderson Silva. That was UFC, what, 234, I think.
Anyway, right.
It doesn't matter. But Anderson Silva before that was on a 2-fight losing streak. He missed 2 years, and then he was coming back in. Was not ranked, was not planned. All of a sudden, right before the fight, Anderson Silva, 15th ranked middleweight. I highly doubt the rankings panel really threw that one in there, you know, without getting a little bit of a push or without the promotion just saying, hey, we're putting a number there so we have something to sell a pay-per-view with. And they've done that before. Look at the UFC rankings right now. Yuri Prohaska beat the 7th ranked light heavyweight in the world in Volkan Oezdemir. Yuri Prohaska is below Alexander Gustafsson, who said that he retired after he lost to Anthony Smith, which was over a year ago. He's taken all this time off, and he has a fight booked July 24th against Fabrizio Verdum at heavyweight. So the UFC rankings themselves, that's where this kind of comes into play. They don't mean anything. They're silly. They're arbitrary. They're a way to sell more numbers. When you have Gustafsson fighting Verdum, you can say, hey, right next to his name, it's going to say number 4 or number 5 LHW, and somebody's going to see that and go, wow, this is number 4 against number 11. Oh, Gustafsson's going to win easy. You know what I mean? It's a way to sell a fight to somebody that maybe they wouldn't have been interested in it before. There's that number there, a little bit of recognition. Wowee, we get an extra view, and that counts. So the real question, like the sports entertainment mix type of thing, we're going to get more of these star matchups. We're going to get the Masvidals and the Connors, or the rematch for the BMF belt with Diaz and Masvidal. We're going to get more of those at the expense of insert hot rising prospect, Munir Lazez and Khamzat Chimaev, we saw from Wednesday night, or Amanda Ribas, probably not Sean O'Malley because he's proven to be a star, but some of these up-and-coming fighters that you want to see more of. Brad Riddle, I want to see more of him. He's a city kickboxing guy. He's Volkanovski's buddy, but are we going to get a promotional push for Brad Riddle? Probably not. So there's a lot of fighters that could use it. They're not going to get it because the UFC's concern right now is the fact that we're trying to sell pay-per-views. We're trying to get eyeballs glued to ESPN. Well, what does that? Oddly enough, that Wednesday night card actually did pretty good. I have to say that. From experience, it was weird that Cater and Ige and a lot of prospects did well. But in general, to sell a pay-per-view to get 1.3 million buys, you have 3 title fights with a bunch of stars, and you just bank off of that. So it's always at the expense of somebody. It's unfortunate that it's the prospects. And as for a fix, you go boxing. Do you just go mandatory challenger, and it gets kind of boring? Or do you do the Four Kings thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess for me it's interesting because what we talked about before that seems to keep propping its or coming back up is that it's the 80-20 rule in the sense that 20% of the fighters get 80% of the attention. So when you look at the UFC and you say, okay, does it matter that the UFC is trying to groove Jorge Masvidal and groove Conor McGregor and groove Nate Diaz and groove all these fighters that they want to get the most out of. They want to get the most juice when they're squeezing these oranges that, you know, why do they do that? Well, that's only for a couple of guys. And for the most part, while I agree with you, and I agree with you completely when you say, when you put the arbitrary number next to Alexander Gustafsson, why do you do that? Right? Even though it says number 12 or whatever, LHW, why do you do that? Well, it's easier to do that than explain why this person, why Fabrizio Verdum is fighting an unranked fighter, you know, and you're like, well, he's fighting Gustafsson's first fight, but he fought John Jones. It's just easier to say, okay, he's number 12 in lightweight. It's instant credibility if you don't know. And that's why you said that. And I can appreciate that point. But what I'm saying is that I don't know if it's as big a problem as we'd like to think it is, or if it's just a big problem at the top, and the top is what most people care about. And it seems that way. It seems like we can't get Masvidal and McGregor together. We can't get Masvidal and Covington together for a lot of different reasons. Listen, had we got Masvidal and Conor when we wanted them, or we got Masvidal and Covington when we wanted them, they could have lost. Could have lost to Conor or lost to Covington. We never would have got the Usman fight. So, you know, if you're Dana, you got to sit back and say, who can carry someone and how do I protect them so that when I need them, like Kamaru Usman, listen, if you listen to this, Kamaru, it's a surprise. But also, he needs help. I apologize to him. He needs help to carry a card, right? So you want to make sure that you don't damage the guys who could help him carry a card when you need him to, right? If you run it, because I got news for you guys. Anybody that thinks that Kamaru Usman had anything to do with that 1.3 million number is going to find out he didn't when he fights Gilbert Burns. So, because you're going to see the number for the Burns fight. And I guarantee you, the next day, you're not going to wake up, look at your phone, and have the UFC announcing the Burns Usman number. You're going to have to look through, you know, dig in the Vegas desert or the, you know, UAE desert, wherever the fight takes place, to find that number.
Hello, Dave Meltzer. What are the numbers?
Meltzer, hit me. So I understand why they do it, but again, it's a problem for 20% of the fighters, but they're the big ones, and they're the ones we care about, so it seems like a bigger deal. And there you have it.
I mean, no, let's get into it. Like, it's Fight Night Picks. Let's get into it. What's the fix? Or is it a problem that needs to be fixed? Like, is it something that we see coming up and up? Because the trouble I see is everybody wants Aljamain Sterling to fight for Bantamweight Gold. I think it should happen. The hardcores on the internet think it should happen. It seems like a foregone conclusion. But they're going to tease it. They're going to do a couple of different things. Is Sterling a star? I think he's as big as a star as you might get at Bantamweight right now. I honestly do. He's a bigger star than Piotr Jan. He really is. In North America, anyway.
Okay, so let's just talk. All right, you want to get into it? Let's get into it. Here we go. Here's how we get into it. If Piotr Jan fought Aljamain Sterling, right, in a normal world, what – and you don't have to be, you know, exactly on this, but just give me an estimation. Piotr Jan fights Aljamain Sterling, what's the number? How many pay-per-view buys? If it headlines. Hey,
what's the card? What's the rest of the card look like? There's
doesn't
trouble.
Matter. What's the card with just those guys?
What if you had Donald Cerrone, Matt Brown 2 as your co-main?
Okay, fair.
Like, you'd have to build that one up. If it's just, we're working in hypotheticals. Let's say this weekend's card coming up, Deiveson Figueiredo, Benavidez 2. Uh-huh. It's a decent card, but it's not like going to blow your socks off. It's for flyweight gold a second time. How many buys would that get if it's pay-per-view? Less than 200,000, probably. Seriously?
Okay. Well, we got to go back to Piotr Jan for my point. So Piotr Jan, Aljamain Sterling, 300,000, 400,000.
300, maybe. Maybe.
300,000. Maybe. Piotr Jan fights Dominic Cruz. How many buys does it get?
450.
Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah, around the same.
So that's the issue. It's 150,000 buys of difference at $70 a piece. So it's hard to say to Dana White, you know, I want you to take this one. I want you to go up there, get in the box, and take one for the team. And you're going to put Aljamain Sterling out there. It's easier to book a fight with a proven star than to build a star, because you don't know that guy's going to become a star no matter what you do. Look at Roger Huerta.
How do you make a proven star? Because, again, like all these stars that they push, the Huertas, the Paige VanZants, the Sage Northcutts, Mickey Gall, the CM Punks, like, and CM Punk's an anomaly. I get it. But how do you end up with a star? Like, I'll give you an example. Budding star that everybody wants to see have success. Jeff Neal. Jeff Neal at 70 on his best day looks like he could beat any welterweight in the world. A, nobody wants to fight him, so he can't get a contract. But the guy seems like a star. But why isn't he a star?
I don't know. And there's a school of thought that if someone isn't a star the first time you see him, they'll never be a star. There's a school of thought there. And I'm not saying that that's Jeff Neal, but I will say that, you know, you could do – it's hard to imagine someone more marketable than Eddie Alvarez, right? Eddie Alvarez, coming from Bellator, was a modern-day – yeah, he was the Toro Gotti in an MMA cage. Underground King, had a moniker. Like, he was everything that you want. I don't know that Eddie Alvarez was a star in the UFC. I think that he's not somebody that could carry a card. Was Eddie Alvarez a more exciting fighter than GSP? Absolutely. Was he a better fighter than GSP? No, but he's more exciting. Didn't make him a bigger star. GSP was just a star, man. He had a look. He came out in a gi. He talked a certain way. He just was a star. And there's no tangible way. There are any number of well-built, bald-headed, 170 pounders in the history of the, you know, does he look that different than Josh Berkman or Josh Emmett or?
Well, Josh Berkman at the beard.
Ryan Jimmo. I mean, does he look that different than these guys?
He's 205.
No, I'm just saying in his look. So, no. So my point is that there's been a bunch of guys who, there's been a bunch of white guys with bald heads, well-built in the UFC. They weren't George St. Pierre. So I don't know what makes a star. If I did, we'd have a lot more views.
Shouts to St. John, New Brunswick. You just got a reference there with Ryan Jimmel. Rest in
there
peace.
We go. So listen, guys, there you have it. The episode of Early Stoppage on Fight Night Picks is in the books. Be sure and comment. Let us know what you think makes a star. Let us know where we're going wrong, what we're missing. I think that there's a lot of things that got to fall in place. You know, it's the Till knockout. It's the three-piece in a soda. It's the aspirin knee that makes you a star. It's the long hair. It's the beard. It's all of it, right? And you can't control all those things. Darren Till comes in with his head right and eyes focused, and he probably takes Jorge Masvidal out. That's how Darren Till showed up. Ben Askren realizes that he could get kneed in the face. There's a lot of things that make a star, right? Conor McGregor taking out guys in the way that he did. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. So it's tough. All right. Like I said, be sure and comment under the video. Let us know what you want to see next from the show here on YouTube. Also on iTunes and Spotify. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty, preferably not in English.
Vamos a entrar en eso.
Which means what?
Let's get into it.
All right, guys. See you next week.